Well, it is Thursday, January 28th, 2021. This is a meeting of the Washington State Fish and Wildlife Commission Fish Committee. We have three items to discuss today in a particular order. We have hatchery policy update that will be done by Ron Warren, Ken Warhite, and Commissioner McIsaac. We then have non-native game fish and fisheries policy update by Steve Caramel. And then we will go into Willapa Bay C-3622 update, Marlene Wagner and Ron Warren. So, Ron, you and Ken and Don, please.
Ron, if you're okay with this, maybe I can start off a little bit on a writing work group assignment. Is that okay with you, Ron?
Fantastic, Commissioner. Thank you.
Let me share my screen here and get back to... if I can find it here. No, I thought it was up. Sorry about that. It'd be this one here. There we go. Okay. So let me go back to the Fish Committee recommendations, which were adopted by the commission back in December. So what's the chore here to the writing work group? It was A, to incorporate some changes to fix all the grammatic and wording situations there. As you'll see in a moment, I think that's been done, but if people have some sharp eyes, undoubtedly there's probably a couple more in there that we could get help with. B, it was to add some clarifying or additional descriptive language regarding limits. There's a new policy guideline 4. There are revisions to policy guideline 4 that if Dr. Warhite's amenable to trying to describe a new concept to get to that whole question, when we see the draft coming up here. C was to provide some additional language responsive to tribal input from December 2nd. There are a couple of sentences in there that do address the tribal concerns that we received at both in writing and at a meeting with the tribal policy folks. And then last, consider other clarifying and more descriptive language consistent with policy intent. And there were a few changes on that. There were a lot of places where there was not changes. So let me see if I can navigate to, this is the schedule. We'll get to that in a moment. Let me navigate to the draft. There it is. Okay, so in the materials for the meeting today available to everybody is the Fish Committee SEPA review draft. With regard to those challenges to the writing group, the purpose statement, the authority, definition, intent, neither one of those changed very much. General policy statement did not change very much until we get to the point of the tribal input. Recall that it said that immediately after adoption that the director is tasked to begin development of a joint policy agreement with the tribal co-managers in their geographic areas. These two sentences were added. The tribes were interested in overtly stating that this is interim guidance until a joint policy agreement is developed in these regional areas with tribal co-managers. That's a new sentence in there responsive to that request. And then the last one is that if there is a joint policy agreement, when it is developed, it would supersede the provisions of the policy. So that is responsive to task number 3 from the commission last December. The policy guidelines, 1 is virtually unchanged, as is 2, as is 3. Number 4 has quite a bit of changes that gets to a new science-based risk assessment and structured decision-making process that I hope Dr. Warhite will make a few words of words to. Let me just scroll quickly to say how many other changes are here. Number 5 is a policy guideline. This is a new one that provides high-level policy direction that there may be hatchery production changes, increases, and even decreases that are a result of this policy. Paragraph number 6, policy guides, is a new one that is got a consolidated area business, and it's high priority in the whole scheme of things in terms of the hatchery policy business. Number 7 is virtually unchanged. Number 8 is virtually unchanged. Number 9 has a change in terms of how this comes about. There's a sentence in here asking for funding for a process to identify these best of the best populations that need a superlative level of protection from hatchery impacts. So there's a couple of new sentences there. Guideline number 10 is virtually unchanged. The adaptive management section has been streamlined to have one paragraph dealing with some of the initial concepts. The other paragraphs have been incorporated into the business that Dr. Warheit will talk about. And the last paragraph was in a previous draft and has been a little streamlined that talks about how the alignment of any changes from this policy would be aligned with federal ESA and salmon recovery plans. So with that, I can scroll back to paragraph number 4. And if Dr. Warheit is willing to speak a little bit about this, and I can also scroll down to the figure if you'd like to. So Dr. Warheit, can you say a little bit about this?
I sure will. Thank you, Dr. McIsaac. I think it would be more, more informative if you scroll down to the figure. I will give a little brief introduction. The figure is not the, it comes after the appendix. There we go. So you can shrink that down a bit. That would be fine. During the process of discussing this policy, the concept of balancing risks and benefits was fundamental to the success of this policy. But we did realize that we didn't really describe how one goes about doing the balance. And we felt as though that was probably where a lot of concern was risen by, we received a lot of comments about not having a science basis for that balance. The previous policy pointed to recommendations from the HSRG, and I assume that that's what people were talking about in terms of a scientific basis. So we decided to try to construct what this balance would look like, but we thought it would be best that we're going to remove this entire construction of balance and how we'll go about accomplishing that to a separate document. That document is in this policy document is being referred to as the technical procedures document. We want to emphasize that this document will go through a separate environmental review from this policy. So we're not trying to circumvent any kind of scrutiny in terms of how our hatcheries will be managed. In particular, what kind of production is going to be will be produced from the hatcheries. That is a large concern. Are we going to increase? Are we going to decrease? Are we going to keep the same? How do we determine how many fish are going to be produced from a particular hatchery? So that concept and that decision-making process is going to be captured in this technical procedures document. It will take us about a year, hopefully, a year to produce this document. And until that time that the document is produced. So let me just take a step back. The order of things to occur is that we're going to write this technical procedures document. Following that, we will start the development of these HMPs. And in section 4, we talk about the priority, which HMPs are going to be written first, starting with the Southern Resident Orca Prey Initiative. Until these HMPs are written, there's a statement that we make in the policy that states, until HMPs are prepared and approved in accordance with this policy, existing hatchery operations, plans, goals, and objectives that are in effect or were in effect June 14th, 2018 will remain intact, meaning prior to the commission meeting in 2014, all of those goals, objectives, operation plans will be in effect. So nothing is changed until we basically are able to successfully write and get approved these HMPs. So I'm just going to provide just a little bit of detail in terms of what we mean by this structured decision-making process. This is an example. The figure right here is an example of sort of the risk management component of that. I'm emphasizing this is an example. It may not look like this, but the general concept should be there. I'm not going to go through each box, but I would like to highlight a few areas. There's the area in the middle, which talks about hazards and assets. So hazards are potential negative effects that may occur from hatchery production, such as reduced fitness of the wild population. We have we will design an objective. It will be science-based. Some of the concepts from, the idea of understanding the numbers of hatchery fish on the spawning grounds would be issues we'll be examining. The benefits, the assets from hatchery production are basically the things that you think about why we're producing fish. We're producing fish for three reasons as we document in this thing. For mitigation purposes, we're producing fish for fishery benefits, and we're producing fish for conservation. So those are the assets. Now we're going to try to look at these things from a quantitative standpoint. What is the probability of an asset? What is the hazard of an asset or a probability? Hazard or asset probabilities, or the hazard or asset impacts. That means, is the impact a big thing or a little thing? Little thing. Those things will be constructed, and I refer to that as the risk assessment part. That is objective. It'll be based primarily on biological science. There may be some social science that comes into that. Then the next stage occurs where we go into the risk management, which takes risk management and a decision in terms of how many fish are produced are policy decisions. So that's in the ballpark right here of the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife director or designee in terms of making decisions in terms of hatchery production. There are other things that will take place in making that decision besides the risk assessment. And we've outlined things here. There are existing requirements, there are treaties, there's social, economic, legal issues we have to consider. All of these aspects here will go into the decision-making process. Finally, I want to point out that this entire thing will be adaptively managed. So if we go through a process where a decision is made to either maintain a particular hatchery level, a production level, decrease or increase, that decision will be scrutinized in perpetuity through a monitoring and evaluation program. So the monitoring evaluation program will allow us to adaptively manage to basically say, okay, whatever decision we made in 2022 may not have been the right decision because we've underestimated the benefits and overestimated the risks, or vice versa, that we underestimated the risks. And actually these actions are causing more hazards than we thought they would occur. So we have the ability to make adjustments. The details of all this, now if you scroll down a little bit, Dr. McIsaac, there's a large figure caption here. So I encourage everyone to read the contents of this figure caption because they are part of the policy. And in the bottom, we gave an example of how this flow diagram would work. But the main point of here is that this process is objective, it'll be transparent, it'll be science-based, and it will be policy-based. And all of these things will come together, and the agency and the public will know why we're making a certain decision. That's it.
Any questions? Commissioner Thorburn has her hand up, Dr. Warhite.
Okay. Commissioner Thorburn.
Good morning. Thank you, Dr. Warhite. And I haven't had a chance to read the caption, so some of this may be covered. Couple of things. Is this envisioned hatchery by hatchery? Will it be this process, or will it look at basins? That's my first question. And my second question is, and you kind of touched on this when you were talking about the hazard side of the equation. How much of this process do we already have in terms of indicators that will be used? Will you be seeking, you referred to social science aspects, will there be sort of a brainstorming about the kinds of indicators and measures that will go into this process?
So Thank you for the question. Two questions, Commissioner. Answer the first one first. Now I have to remember what the first one was. could you repeat the first question?
It was about whether this is going to be hatchery by hatchery.
Oh, thank you.
Or
so this document, this technical procedures document, is going to be only one document. We're not writing a separate technical procedures document for every hatchery or every program within a hatchery. It's not going to be summarized by basin. This is going to give a consistent blueprint to every hatchery and all hatchery production about how this decision is going to be made. So it doesn't mean that the whole flow diagram will be identical among every basin, because every basin is going to have a different set of assets and risks, or assets and hazards. And then the risk management component, the existing requirements and other aspects will be different among basins. Where we get, but where there will be different is these HMPs will be written for every program. So the HMPs, just like HGMPs, will be specific for that basin. But the basis of that, how we go about making decisions, will be contained in this procedures document that's yet to be written. So, and then the second question, I'm sorry, I should have written these down. I was thinking about answering the second question first because I was on my mind. The second question was?
Okay. It was about indicators and measures and how much of this is going to be de novo. What kind, you referred to it on the hazard side that we'll be taking some of the things that were used, for example, with the HSRG, but how much work is going to go into developing this basically? What kinds of measures that
sort of thing? So I think identifying general hazards, there's been a lot of work done on that. What hasn't been worked on are things like the probability or impact of hazards. And those it's still undecided basically whether these are going to be quantitative or qualitative measures. On the asset side, there are things that are frequently the benefits of hatchery productions are often not reached. Oftentimes that has to do with the vagaries of environment. The warm blob is killing all our fish, so we're not going to make production levels. So those are the kinds of things that will be incorporated in this process. Certainly the Southern Resident Orca Prey Initiative that's considered an asset. It's a conservation, but in essence, it is a large scale experiment. We don't know whether the benefits of that will be reached. So there are things like that we will examine. Now, I don't know how much social science we would go into it, because social science gets down to understanding the public's desire to have fish produced for fisheries or not have fish produced for fisheries. I'm not envisioning that we're gonna do a grand survey on that. But certainly a lot of the assets are more of a social concept and rather than a biological concept. So I'm punting a little bit on the asset side because we just haven't talked enough about that. The hazard side, a lot of that work has already been developed, and I hope that we will include additional hazards like ecological hazards, which have not really been incorporated into a lot of the HSR. It's been incorporated into their thinking, but not into their metrics like PHAS, PNOD, PNI. So we will work on including that, but I'm hopeful that a year's worth of time would be sufficient to be able to develop this document.
If I may, Dr. Warheit, Ron Warren has his hand up.
Chair Carpenter, thank you. Commissioner Thorburn, to add to Dr. Warheit's responses to you, I just wanted to offer that this has to be an extensive co-manager outreach statewide, and the development of this also has to go out to the public for review. So we're not thinking that this is going to be an internally developed document, very externally developed document. And I think that's part of the 1 year hopeful completion timeframe.
And to dovetail on that, as I mentioned, a separate environmental review, meaning that this document itself will have to go through SEPA.
Yep.
We anticipate that that will be certainly a part of that 1 year process.
So, Mr. Chairman, let me scroll quickly to the schedule here, which was the other part of the Fish Committee recommendation possibilities here. And it's pretty brief, but let me just run through this. So here we are today on January 28th at the Fish Committee meeting, and we'd consider a recommendation regarding approval of the draft. The Fish Committee, Mr. Chairman, now is loaded up with, I think, two members. So when you and I get done with this, maybe we could think about a recommendation. The full commission will consider approving this draft containing changes for the purposes of conducting a review under SEPA. That's what we're calling the SEPA review draft, and an expected schedule and process of which this is the draft. In February, the month of February, the staff would work on a SEPA assessment document. And as Mr. Warren indicated, there would be consultation with tribal co-managers and government-to-government meetings with various tribes. There's a two-week period for a public review of the SEPA assessment that the staff comes up with regard to, what are the environmental impacts associated with these changes in comparison to the previous policy? And the public would review that assessment for 2 weeks. The staff would then spend some time reviewing the public comment and finalizing the SEPA assessment document. Depending on the volume of all of that and the specifics, if it's possible, then we would move to the commission meeting here in late March, where the Fish Committee and the full commission would consider the issue. This would be one for public comment and have a discussion about a final decision. But the final decision, as it has been in our recent protocols anyway, would be moved to our Friday call, what they used to be called Friday calls, and the final commission action would be scheduled for April 9th if this all comes together. So that's the proposed schedule that that we've got here. Ron Warren, did I miss anything on this when I went over it in that quick shotgun?
No, sir.
So, Mr. Chairman, I know you're looking to make some room for the next agenda item. We've been very brief on this. When we get to Saturday, perhaps we can take a little bit more time. There is public testimony on Saturday. You're not going to be taking any here today, I understand, on this. But given our involvement in the writing work group and the process with the staff getting to this point, I think it might be useful to other commissioners to know that we in the Fish Committee, you and I guess, in the Fish Committee are recommending that this draft and this schedule be approved to move this process forward.
I concur, Don, with that. We'll bring it forward to the full commission. And hopefully, before too long, once we get the ninth commissioner on board, we will have two more. We'll have a total of four again. I just want to close on this and thank, there's a lot of people that deserve thank you for the work that's gone into this. There's so many of them individually, I'd be afraid of missing somebody. So I'm just going to give a broad thank you to staff, commissioners, and the public, and people that have worked on this. And Ken and Don, you guys, we put the 16-ounce gloves on you guys for 3 days, and you went into a meeting and you found commonality. In agreement, I think that's fair to say. I very much appreciate that, and thank you for that. So, are there any other comments on this issue?
This is Jim Anderson. If I could just say a couple words, I think this is a meets the objectives here. We'll have further discussion, of course, but from my perspective, it's scientifically based, that it has the risk management framework in it that I think is critical. It incorporates multiple purposes that we talked about for the past couple of years, and it engages with the tribes that everybody has articulated is so important in order for us to have a robust program here. So I want to thank everybody too.
Thank you, Commissioner Anderson. Much appreciated. Okay, we will move now to the second item, non-native game fish and fisheries policy update. Steve Caramel.
Chair Carpenter, if I may.
Kelly Cunningham first.
Yeah, I just have a few opening comments before we turn it over to Steve, just to maybe paint the picture for you a little bit, if that's all right, sir.
Absolutely.
Great. So good morning, Chair and members of the committee. So we're here this morning to provide you all with an update on the development of the non-native game fish policy. And specifically, we want to share with you where we are today, our schedule moving forward, and our plan to engage the public in the process ahead of us. I think it's important to understand, for all of you to understand, that we are in the very initial stages of the policy development process. We've still got a whole bunch of work to do, and I just want you all to be aware of that. What you're going to hear today is our proposed timeline and our approach to outlining the management categories, our thoughts on the potential range of alternatives. And again, we're very interested in your feedback. And I think I heard that we won't be hearing any public comment today, but rest assured there's going to be plenty of opportunity in our process for that voice to be heard. So we still got a bunch of work to do with the advisory group to make sure the final policy language strikes that balance. And what we're really talking about here is the balance between reducing risks to native species while at the same time enhancing, you know, recreational fisheries with the use of non-native game fish. And I know you're aware that non-native game fish are a big contributor to recreational fisheries, license sales, and they're growing in popularity. We're seeing that nationwide, and it's reflected in Washington as well. There is an interest from many of our folks on the advisory group and our fish managers in building a policy that will allow us to keep up with this growing demand. And where we have the, I think the kicker here is where we have the authority to do so and where it's appropriate. So where it won't significantly negatively impact native species. The suite of alternatives in the slides that you're going to see, just want to be very clear on this. Again, we're in the initial stages, so these alternatives should not be considered agreed to by anybody or complete by any means. So this tension that I mentioned earlier is a topic that raises diverse perspectives, and it's pretty, I think it's becoming clear that we're likely not going to reach consensus as an advisory group, and that's okay. The purpose of the advisory group is to give us information that we consider and use to build the policy and the alternatives. And again, they're a starting point. These alternatives, we're going to be working hard with advisors on refining them before we go out to the public for the public's input and their comment. And once we hear back from the public, we're going to be sure to let you know what we hear. And maybe just to put a point on all of this, I'm aware that the commission received a letter early this morning from a subset of our advisory board members expressing some concerns. Upon reading the letter, I strongly encourage you to reach out to us with any additional questions or direction you may have for us. And as we work to develop the policy, we're making sure to build it within the sideboards provided by both the commission and the legislature. As you recall, we have legislative direction directing us to liberalize bag limits for certain non-native game fish in anadromous waters. That's 2019 legislation. And then we also have guidance from you all and the broader commission that the policy support the protection and recovery of native species, that it rely on the best available science and also supports non-native game fish opportunities where possible. And that was that direction, as you're aware, was provided through the blue sheet in December of last year. So I'm going to pause there. I'm going to turn it back over to Steve to walk you through the alternatives and where we're at today. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Kelly. Steve?
Okay. Thank you, Commissioners. Thanks, Kelly. Let me get this presentation up. My connection is not great this morning, so we may end up going to Kirk Hughes here in a minute. Can you guys see that presentation?
Yes. It's not in presentation mode, but yes.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah, go ahead, swap. Yep, that's good.
Okay, good morning, everyone. So Kelly has already kind of walked us through the legislative guidance here and the Fish and Wildlife Commission guidance, the blue sheet. So what I'm going to do is just kind of get straight into this. So back in August of 2020, this past August, we put out a news release soliciting for members for our ad hoc non-native game fish advisory group. We were looking for about a dozen members for the group, and we were shooting for, you know, as typical, really broad representation, both geographically, you know, people from around the state, and we were looking for people with pretty diverse perspectives. We received, if I remember right, about 15 to 20 applications for that. Again, we were looking for about a dozen, so we narrowed it down, and we've got four members from Eastern Washington and eight from Western Washington. I've got two slides here for the schedule. This first slide, it ends today, and it's all the work that we've done to date. But we kicked off this process internally back in June and developed a draft framework that morphed into what we're going to be talking about today. And I believe it was in July that Craig Burley briefed the Fish Committee with a blank framework. So you guys have already seen, I think, our framework at least once of what it is we're planning to do. And since then, we've had three meetings with our advisory group trying to craft options that fit within the sideboards that Kelly had started to mention earlier. For each of the policy elements that we'll be talking about here fairly soon. This second slide here for the schedule is the work that we still need to accomplish, and it represents a draft timeline for public input as well as drafting the actual written policy. There at the top is actually a 30-day SEPA public review. We'll probably put this out for public review sometime in February, after I talk with our SEPA coordinator. We'll be engaging with the advisory group on at least three more occasions. My guess is probably four or five more occasions. And we have multiple points along the way to get public input, for the public to get their eyes on this, give input on the draft policy elements that we're going to talk about here in a little bit, as well as the draft written policy. The hope here is to have, you know, everything completed by September of 2021 with a commission briefing and decision. And there's still a ton of work to do here. So instead of, making sure all these dates here are, you know, kind of chiseled in stone, I think we'd rather just have a good product here in the end and just take our time with it and make sure we get it done right. So once again, as far as the guidance for the policy development, Kelly Cunningham already spoke briefly about the legislative guidance, which was Second Substitute Hospital 1579. He mentioned that once again, there was a commission blue sheet that directed the policy development. But on top of that, there are the three bullets on this slide. You know, the first thing here is that we need to make sure that the policy being developed is consistent with existing commission policies, consistent with other species conservation plans. And what I always point the committee yet when we're talking with about this is the SWAP, the State Wildlife Action Plan, Priority Habitat and Species List. But, you know, we also have a Steelhead Management Plan, Bull Trout Conservation Plan, the Climate Change Policy, FERC Relicensing Agreements, and there's, you know, restoration and recovery plans even at the local level. So there's a lot of things to look at. And then the last sideboard here is that this policy needs to be consistent with state law. Obviously, the policy cannot supersede state law. Okay, so getting into the policy itself, I've got three slides here on draft definitions. I'm not going to go through all these, but just wanted to really touch on them briefly that, you know, we developed these based on, you know, words or phrases that was in some of our draft language that the advisory group had questions or concerns about. So we wrote all those down along the way and tried to provide a little bit of context or maybe a little bit of an example to make them more clear and less all-encompassing. You know, some of the typical ones, anadromous waters, we kind of defined that back in 2019 when we were working on House Bill 1579 work. Illegal introduction, something we always deal with. Again, native species of concern. We mentioned that in the policy quite a bit, and those are defined in the State Wildlife Action Plan, priority habitat species list, and as well as anything that's listed under ESA. Game fish, whether they're native or non-native, are all listed in RCW and WAC. So we point people to that where that is located. And actually, I think in the policy, we'll have an actual table. They don't. The WAC and RCW doesn't actually say whether they're native or non-native. The term significant, it's one of those ones that that always comes up in a policy, and what do you mean by significant? So we kind of define significant here to be, well, actually you need to define it. If you're gonna say something significant, what does that mean? And then the biggest one here on the end is where appropriate. Time, place, and manner on a specific water body where enhancement, control, or suppression may occur, but is also consistent with existing commission policies, species conservation plans, and or state law. So now getting into the construction of the policy itself. During our initial internal meetings, myself, you know, I think Kurt Hughes, Craig Billy might have been involved in those, and all of our RPMs, we came up with policy elements that we thought were important to be contained in the final policy, what, when, where, of managing non-native species. So for these first five or six of them here, the first five we've had since the beginning, the last one, control, we added, I think it was in November. But population management's kind of, you know, all consuming. Where and when can we manage for non-native game fish? What types of regulations are appropriate? Where can we introduce, move fish around? Where and when do we use stocking? What types of waters? Habitat projects provide habitat for many different types of species. So what's appropriate and when? How do we deal with illegal introduction? This is always something that we're trying to deal with. Fish get moved around all the time. And often that kind of messes with the management we already have going on in the lake. So how do we deal with illegal introduction? And then the last one, control, maybe it's the wrong title, but it's was designed to help us maintain our lake and stream rehab program, to be able to go in to certain waters, use rote known to control certain fish species, so we may have fisheries, productive fisheries for trout or for one more fish. But it also allows us to go in, say, to a lake that has been stocked illegally with northern pike. How do we get rid of the northern pike? Next, we developed six different water types. So for river streams and beaver ponds with native anadromous fish or with native species of concern. Once again, species of concern is listed in the priority habitat species list or the state wildlife action plan. For river streams, beaver ponds without native species of concern, probably not a lot of river streams and beaver ponds without native species of concern, but we know that they exist. And then lakes, ponds, and reservoirs with native anadromous fish or with native species of concern or with limited or no connectivity or no anadromy. And this is the last slide that we're gonna kind of go over, but it kind of brings all of that together. So for each policy element and water type combination, we provided or we developed up to three different policy statement options. And okay, this one here for native anadromous fishes in river streams and beaver ponds, there's only two options. And at the bottom for with river streams and beaver ponds without native species of concern, there's only one option. But when you look at these, the ones that have multiple options from left to right, they would go from least conservative to most conservative for native fish. So just looking at this, the top one, we will manage for the benefit of native anadromous fishes, but may also actively manage for non-native game fish species when impacts to anadromous fishes are directly assessed with best available science, are not significant, and are consistent with anadromous fish management and recovery. So a lot of ifs, ands, or buts there. And then the more conservative option is we don't care about any of that. You'll only manage for the benefit of native anadromous fish. So these policy statements, we have developed these for once again, for every policy element and water type combo. Fairly soon, we're going to get these out for public comment. And once we receive public comment, we will incorporate that into these options here. From there, a single option will be chosen for each policy element water type combo. So that's going to be a total of 36 total elements, I guess. And those will be used to craft the final policy. So I guess that's it quickly in a nutshell. The plan here was just to give a quick briefing on where we are in the process and what the progress is to date. I think we provided everyone with the presentation of a couple of days ago so you guys could review it. So I guess at this point, I'm just, as Kelly says, pump the brakes and open this up for questions.
Steve, we have two commissioners with their hands up, Commissioner Thorburn and then Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you. Stephen and Kelly. I'm really pleased with the work to date. As I looked through the slides before your presentation and then listened to the hatchery presentation, I was thinking, boy, you know, these are really kind of similar situations where we have a situation where there are major risks and also tremendous benefits. And how are we balancing those? And that's really what I was thinking of when the blue sheet was submitted. And I'm pleased that I can't think of other issues and the breakdown of the different kinds of waters just seems like a real good approach. Just in general, my thinking about risk versus benefit is where you have more threatened situations, we're going to err more on the conservative side, and where there are less threatened situations, we'll be able to use more liberal approaches. I do strongly recognize the benefits of these fisheries. They're very popular in my neck of the woods. So I just think this is a great endeavor that you're undertaking. I do have one specific question. I was interested in the introduction translocation section and curious about how much of this effort is currently in existence in department practice. What non-native game species do we artificially produce, and what kinds of introductions and translocations have taken place in the past?
Well, so for non-native game fish in the state, currently we produce sterile tiger muskie at Ringgold Meesburg Hatchery. We produce about 5,000 fish a year. And besides those, we produce eastern brook trout. We have a stock of brown trout, and I believe that's both of those are California stocks, or we got them from California probably in the 70s. And on a yearly basis, we do get a few, again, it's going to be like 5,000 or so golden trout out of Wyoming. So that's the fish that we produce. But as far as, so obviously all those fish get stocked out on a yearly basis. I don't have the brown trout numbers in my head. The brook trout numbers have tailed way, way off in the past, 10 or 20 years to nearly nothing. but as far as translocation, we do let's say Sprague Lake, once again, over in your area. After that was rehabbed in the mid 2000s or early 2000s, we did translocate some fish back into Sprague Lake. I believe we put in largemouth bass. We put just actually this year, I think we brought some white crappie over from Silver Lake in Cowlitz County. But again, all that goes either, if it needs to go through the CEPA process, it goes through the process. If it needs to, it all goes through our fish health process. But in the grand scheme of things, or if you're talking about fish like smallmouth bass, largemouth bass, or anything like that, we do basically nothing on a yearly basis. I guess we'll put it that way.
Steve, do you want to talk about channel catfish?
Oh, thank you, Kelly. Commissioner Thorburn. Also, we have purchased channel catfish, off and on over the years, with the warm water program money. We have probably about a dozen lakes, I'm just going to use that number, statewide that have gone through the CEPA process to allow the use of channel catfish. We use those just like we do rainbow trout. It's kind of a put and take fishery, or a put, grow and take fishery. But we don't do that very regularly. We don't often have the money for that. So it seems to be in every 5 to 7 years, we actually purchase some channel catfish.
Thanks.
And just to add to that, those are all in, they all go into, you know, contained ponds.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Commissioner Mukajic, before you start, I'm going to have to step away. I have a gutter contractor showing up, and I have to meet with him for about 5 minutes. So I don't know when that's going to happen, but if you'll take over, I'll be right back at some point. So Don, and then, Commissioner Mukajic, and then Commissioner Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman, and I'll be glad to do that. Let me say, first of all, thanks to the staff for a very nice briefing and a very nice slide presentation. We didn't get to quite all of it, but thanks to you for a very organized approach. And thanks to Commissioner Thorburn for spawning this effort. And also, we have to appreciate all the advisory bodies. We had quite a crowd when this was first brought up as an endeavor. And it's good to see that we do have some good public participation there. My question has to do with slide number 9 and the schedule and the process. And it's, I wonder if you could get to that. And it's kind of all around the idea of where commission, full commission, reaction, guidance might occur at the policy level. So if you can go to the next slide, or wait, no, that's the one. That's the one here. So here, real quick, we're going to be submitting the policy elements out for public comment. And then on March, it says public comment period ends for the draft plan. Perhaps you meant period ends for the elements that go into the plan. Right. And then complete initial draft plan in late April. I see there's a commission briefing in May. We have one meeting. We have a one-day meeting on May 14th. Second draft of the plan and EIS after that. So it's good to see the concept here of here's an initial plan, and there'll probably be some comments that need to be administered or changed or whatever the possibilities there. And a second plan. And then by that time, we've heard a lot of things. This is getting down to some fine sandpaper, and we move to a final decision. But when you mentioned earlier that that there's several options out here for population management policy, and a single option will be chosen. When I think about when does that happen, and is that a policy decision of the full commission, where in here is the full commission going to entertain that? Where in here, if the commission would want to provide some guidance on several other forks in the road that might be out there, where is that? And so whenever the commission wants to do that, we're interested in taking public comment at a commission meeting too, but it looks like it might be here in May, which is a one-day meeting. It says briefing on draft policy and public comments received. Again, I'm looking for a spot here where the commission says, here's a draft plan. It all looks good. We're sanctioning this draft plan to go out for public review, or wait a minute, we'd like some changes here. And if that's where there's a policy decision out of three options on what the population management policy would be, I think it's best designed so that the commission makes that policy judgment. We obviously are always going to be interested in the staff recommendation for that. But I'm having trouble seeing in here where it is where the commission put some guidance in so that as we move toward a final plan, that everybody's comfortable with what the full commission is comfortable and has said so about where this is all going. So I don't know in the time here whether or not you want to respond to that. Let me just put that out as a concern. And the next time the Fish Committee or the full commission hears about this, it doesn't look like it is until May. So maybe there ought to be some more interaction here. But anyway, I'll give you guys a chance to react to those thoughts.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Mukajic. Maybe what we could do is build that in here, not in the moment, but let us build that in, and maybe it's something we could bring to a commission call here in the very near future and see if we can get some buy-off on a proposal. Would that work?
Yeah, that works just fine. Just so we're all thinking about that, that's a good way.
Okay,
so I see Larry has stepped away. So I think I see on here, I think Jim Anderson had his hand up and Commissioner Fred Kuntz has his hand up as well. So Jim, did you have a question?
I do. This pertains to the schedule and also reflection on our earlier discussion today with regard to the hatchery policy. One of the things that we found in the development of the hatchery policy, even back in 2009, was the engagement with the tribes on this. And when we're dealing with anadromous fish, I think it's important to figure out a point of engagement. This is an issue that I think we just have been bringing up, and I think we need to continue to make sure that we've got that calculated in here so that we don't come up with this policy that we think is great and maybe is pretty doggone good, only to find out that some elements, managerial responsibilities weren't talked to. But yes, I don't know if you've given thought to that.
Yeah, thanks for that, Commissioner Anderson. Kurt Hughes, do I think you can jump in and kind of answer that one for me? I think Kurt had a plan to reach out to the tribe.
Yeah, thanks. Commissioners, Kurt Hughes, Fish Management Division Manager. Glad to be with you here today. This is an important topic. One of the key discussion points that we've had throughout the process is that we do need to consult with co-managers in areas where appropriate. And so we will be doing that. We wanted to bring this information to you first. And then before we go out for public comment, we were intending to send a letter to initiate that consultation process.
Okay. Jim, further comment from you on that?
No, just one small suggestion on the chart with the different options. It might be useful to kind of have a little header in there that kind of helps a reader get through all that substance, like, you know, intensity levels or a managerial kind of risk, if you will. So just maybe a little bit more attention to the headers on there could be helpful.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim. And I might suggest if the staff is going to be thinking about this scheduling process detail that somewhere in there it shows up that we're meeting with our tribal co-managers on that. I know in the past they've not always felt like our efforts have been sufficient. So I think it's good to get that in writing somewhere on the schedule so that we can point to that and have it be on everybody's mind. So thank you for that, Commissioner Anderson. Commissioner Kuntz, you have a question?
Yes. Thanks, Steve and Kelly, for a really clear presentation. And I really like how it's focused and you can actually read it and make sense out of it. It's not filled with technical stuff that's confusing. But I do wonder, as the committee was discussing and in the policy development, whether, I like how it's focused on the non-native fish and the native fish. But did you look at the impacts of non-native fish, how we assess them and judge them on other forms of biological diversity? And also even ecological characteristics that aren't even living, like for example, habitat or nutrient recycling, and how do we kind of incorporate concern for all the biological diversity and even abiotic factors in the discussions and more importantly, in the policy itself?
Oh, thank you, Commissioner. That's a great question. So as far as the non-fish biota, those are still covered in my mind under the native species of concern. If you look at the priority habitat species list or the state wildlife action plan, that lists, everything from, plants to butterflies to fish to bears. So it should be covering everything that we're I think that you're talking about as far as biota. But no, I think if we did not look into other factors, other ecological factors, and we didn't take that into account in this policy.
Well, my suggestion is, you know, especially as the world is changing so rapidly, and we're also discouraged about, you know, degradation of ecosystems, and the department is certainly in its new strategic plan putting more attention in that direction, and I think rightfully so. You know, I would suggest you think about that, you know, and even if it's footnotes that explain to the, to the reader and to the public that, you know, these you know, really important and increasingly important concerns are reflected and, you know, haven't just been forgotten out of negligence, because I know that's not the case, but, you know, sometimes perception is reality. So I think we have to be increasingly careful, to keep raising that concern and addressing it. So that's my suggestions. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Koontz. We have two hands up, Commissioner Thorburn and then Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, I just a thought for the commissioners, it sort of related to what Commissioner McIsaac and Commissioner Koontz raised. I think responding to the alternatives that are presented later in the schedule, right now, I think it's a good idea for us to take a careful look at what's been presented as the alternatives under each of the water bodies. And make sure that we're comfortable that it's capturing the breadth of what we want considered in the policy development. So just a reminder to commissioners about our task.
Thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to chime in and add to what Fred was saying, and I would expect to see, as we go through the SEPA review of this policy, that we're looking at the impacts to, you know, non-target species, not just from the planting of non-native fish, but also of the treatments, i.e. rotenone, which, you know, has impacts sometimes unanticipated on non-target aquatic species, aquatic invertebrates, amphibians, even the, you know, the birds and other wildlife that might feed on those. So I would hope that there would be a discussion of those impacts and mitigation for them.
Thank you, Commissioner Smith. I think probably a wrap up to this segment now, Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And yeah, in terms of wrap up, on Saturday at the end of the agenda for the commission meeting, when we look at future meeting planning, it might be good by that time if Mr. Cunningham and the staff could have come up with some suggestions of where we might plug in on the year at a glance, the next couple of checkpoints that get to a commissioner involvement on this. And then lastly, in terms of information to the public or us commissioners who are trying to track this and be able to come back to this presentation in an easy manner, on our website and the commission part of the website, there are some policy review processes for the hatchery policy, for the Columbia River policy. This is kind of a new policy situation. So if a commissioner or the public wants to go look up things like the draft schedule and this presentation, if we don't already have a spot on the website that I just am not familiar with, I'd suggest that we try to get one in there so that as we move through this over the course of 2021, we can get back to the information and the public can as well.
Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. Nikki, I assume you got that regarding the website posting?
Yes.
Okay. Are there any other discussion items on this warm water issue? Okay. Thank you. I thought it was great. Lots to learn. More to learn. We are going to go to Willapa Bay now, and that is Marlene Wagner and Ron Warren.
Chair Carpenter, commissioners, members of the public, Ron Warren, Fish Policy Director for the department. Thanks for the opportunity to give you just a brief look into what we hope to provide you on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Back in December, during future meeting discussions, we talked fairly extensively about the Willapaw policy, and Director Suswind had made the offer, made the claim that staff should take the first shot at a modification to the policy. We've done been involved, obviously, in the fishery management and with the sectors within Willapaw Bay, and been working with them on implementation, have heard their concerns, as have you, over the years. So in that, we would take that commission policy C-3622, and he also made a commitment to get back to you frequently on what our progress was and what those steps were. So in that vein, Saturday, you'll hear a brief introduction to the presentation from me, Marlene Wagner, our new South Coast Policy Coordinator, will walk us through the schedule of events. And in this schedule, what we're trying to do is describe when you will see the first modified draft, which we have in June. And I'll pause there just to say the discussions that we go through during the North Falcon process are already contentious enough at times, depending on how all of the natural and hatchery populations are projected to return. And pardon me, from my perspective, I don't think that we need to add additional controversy by having draft language out there this year. And so the first draft would come to you in June. And then we have a schedule that looks at commission engagement throughout the time from June until what we are projecting as the end of the year. Also would include the public outreach that we would have, not only within the public hearings that the commission holds and the comment that they receive, but also meetings with the public, as well as the environmental review, to hopefully get to a modified policy and possible action by October or November of 2021. And then to close the presentation on Saturday, we would take advantage of the time to kind of preview what has occurred in recent years relative to commission interim guidance on the policy. And that we hope is kind of a quick synopsis, wets the whistle of a couple of our newer commissioners to possibly engage with us between now and February, when we come back with the annual Willapaw Bay Salmon Management briefing, and whether or not the commission would again seek to make some interim management guidelines modifications for us. So we don't have our forecast done yet, so we're unable to make any recommendations, what we think that might look like, but we will be making further recommendations in February, but wanted to give you just a snapshot of what's been done in the past. And then we would conclude, you have public comment, and then we would be available to answer any questions that may come from public comment. So Chair Carpenter, that's what we had. Just wanted to make sure that we didn't have any surprises for the Fish Committee or commissioners that were able to attend the Fish Committee meeting this morning, to make sure you knew what was coming at you on Saturday relative to a pretty popular policy, and answer any questions. I do have Marlene here to talk about the schedule if you have those questions, and Chad Herring is also on in case you have questions about what that interim guideline or interim changes to the policy that you've offered us have been in the past. So, but I knew time was short, so we were going to try to be as efficient as possible this morning.
Thank you, Ron. Yeah, we have about 20 minutes left, and I see that Don McIsaac has his hand up, so I'll go to him, and I'm not going to let him use all 20 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. I'll hold it to 19 or 18 here if I can. No, just a very quick question on that last matter of the interim guidance that's been offered in the past. When we talk, when you get to this topic on Saturday and we talk about it more in February, will we hear on Saturday a little bit about the hatchery interim guidance? I think in the past we've said let's preserve our options as we move through this Willapaw Bay policy in terms of what is in the old policy, I'll call it, that does have a strong hatchery component. There's been some talk about maybe the new policy might not have such a strong hatchery component, but we've got some interim guidance on fishing that is probably a little bit obsolete given the status of coho and Chinook that's coming around the horn in 2021. But on the matter of the hatchery guidance, will that be a topic on Saturday as well, or in addition to the fishery interim guidance?
Chair Carpenter, Commissioner McIsaac, I believe we have the interim guidance that has been offered to us in the past, not only on fishery related, but other management issues. And if it is not, we certainly intend to brief the commission on egg takes at the three facilities within the Willapaw and compared to the goals that we have for those facilities, the stock designations and the limitations from the current policy, and then see if you would certainly have the ability to give us guidance, interim guidance this year. We are slightly over at some facilities. There is some limitations in our policies on movement relative to the stock designations between animals between facilities. So we can talk through that, but that was scheduled for February, Commissioner McIsaac.
Okay, but we'll hear a little bit about it on Saturday as well.
I believe the guidance piece is in there, but I'm not absolutely positive. We can mention it if it is not. So I will be prepared to do that.
Yeah, okay. It's just in the vein of preserving options.
So. Yep. Yes, sir.
Any questions from any other commissioners? Well, I think you did well, Ron. I look forward to that presentation, and I kind of like the way we're going here. So we still have a few minutes that we can talk about much anything, if anybody has anything they want to bring up. I guess they
Larry, want to talk. Larry, do you want to do a short introduction of Lorna and Fred?
Yeah, we can do that. We have two new commissioners, Fred Koontz and Lorna Smith, and they're both on here, and I would ask them to smile and say a few words. And then we'll, after that, we'll go to Commissioner Baker has her hand up. So Fred, Lorna, Fred, in some order, please.
Okay, I'll go first. a few words. That's what you asked, Larry, to say a few words. Ah, it's a joke. Okay. Wait, the joke didn't go over. I mean, in the audience, come on, let's just, you know, please give me a break. But anyway, no, to turn serious, I really feel it's a privilege to have this opportunity. I'm a retired wildlife biologist, and I think there's so much work to do, but I think it's really exciting. You know, a lot of people say that this is like the worst of times, but I actually think it's the best of times, because this is when, you know, people can really make a difference for the future. And I really feel a responsibility, you know, not only to all Washingtonians, And I know there's nine commissioners up there on the commission table, but I want you to know something, that I'm going to kind of be imagining two other commissioners up there, and they're the children that are born today. And I'm going to use my imagination when we discuss issues, everything from fish to wildlife, everything, recreation, hunting, fishing. I'm going to imagine what they would say in our discussions, because I think, you know, that's why I'm really here. I don't have any kids. I'm married, don't have any kids, but I'm really concerned about all our kids and grandchildren of the future. So again, it's a real privilege to be working with such talented people. I have had an opportunity for the last decade to work with a lot of the staff, and they are amazing. We are so lucky to have the staff that we have at Fish and Wildlife. And so anything I can do to help them and help our children, that's what I want to do. So thank you.
Fred, thank you for those comments. Much appreciated. Look forward to working with you. Lorna Smith, please.
Hi, everybody. So I'm really sitting on the Fish Committee, sitting in on the Fish Committee meetings. Fred and I don't have our committee assignments yet. Like Fred, I had a very long career in working in the environmental field, doing environmental analyses. I started my work in wetlands and streams and ended up with large carnivores most recently. So I consider myself kind of an all-around ecologist. And like Fred, I want to speak for all people and all species. And I am a mother and grandmother as well. My husband's a fisheries biologist, so wildlife fisheries biologist. So I'm lucky to have someone who can help interpret some of the technical documents maybe I'm not up to speed on. And I just really look forward to working to better our environment and our recreation opportunities at the same time as we move forward.
Commissioner Smith, thank you very much for those words, and welcome aboard. Look forward to working with both of you. Okay, we're going to wrap up here with Commissioner Baker, I think. Commissioner Baker.
Well, we'll wrap up with a thud. I raised my hand to do what Nikki did, so to try to get Fred and Lorna introduced. They'll probably be introduced a couple more times, but I do have a maybe a softball question for Ron Warren on Willapa, if that's okay, Chair Carpenter.
Totally.
Okay, Ron, my question is just whether as we're going down this new road, which I also just think is the right way to go, but are our Willapa Advisory Committee or committees still working, and is the agency still taking input from them? I'm just curious.
So, Chair Carpenter, Commissioner Baker, thank you. The committees expired the end of the year last year. We hope to keep them on. I think what we've seen over the years is we have a nice portfolio of individuals, pretty diverse in marine and freshwater, rec and commercial, that advise us. And like me, that advisory group is getting older. We've got many of the original members from when I was the regional program manager back in the early 2000s that got to assemble that first advisory committee, still on the committee. And we're hoping that although we'll continue to recognize advisors through this season, we're going to work towards having the meetings open to the public, having a public meeting, everybody involved, to try to see if we can't infuse additional participation, fresh thought in the development and comments on this policy, as well as the management perspectives within Willapa Bay. So I think that's the first time we've said those words publicly, but we've certainly had that comment. We're always looking at are the advisor groups that are ad hoc advisor groups that are appointed by the director, are they serving appropriately or not? And but at this time, we're just going to try to continue to use the advisors, recognize those people who have given us their time for so long, take their input, but do it in a more public forum than we have in years past, and see how that works. And so, yes, the advisory groups are still intact for Willapa and Grace Harbor. And we'll, if you'd like, we can report back on how those meetings function as we go through them, not only through the North Falcon salmon season setting process, but the policy development portion of the schedule as well.
Thanks for that, Ron. One, just what I would like is to continue to be notified about when there are those public meetings, because both Grace Harbor and Willapa are in my backyard, and I try to attend when I can. So thank you.
Thank you for the softball.
Ron, you don't, just to clarify, you do not have a meeting schedule yet, do you?
It's still tentative. We're still trying to get some of those regional meetings put in place for North Falcon. And as soon as we have that, we will post it, make sure that the commission receives copies. And Nikki can work with you relative to trying to get you involved where you want to be plugged in. So we don't have that done yet. We just had a meeting here the tail end of last week, where we confirmed some of the meeting schedules and details with co-managers, and now we're filling in the blanks with public meetings and making sure that we're out there in the public. As commissioners know, we have I think just a hair over 30 public meetings every year to set salmon season setting statewide, from the Tri-Cities to the coast. So, but we'll have it out just as quickly as we can. It's mostly done, but we've still got a few more to add in. And we don't have to worry about what the location's going to be, because it's going to be done just like this. but we just want to make sure that we have the adequate time between meetings to make sure we're prepared, so we're doing justice for the public.
Okay, Ron, thank you very much for that. Anything else from anyone? If not, I will move to adjourn the Fish Committee meeting for, what is today, the 28th. Yes. Thank you all very much for your participation. We'll be talking again soon, like tomorrow morning at 0800. Bye now.
Thanks.